This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
Second Amendment is not absolute. When it was passed, you couldn't own a cannon. You couldn't own certain kinds of weapons. It's just always been limitations. But guess what? These actions we've taken before, they saved lives. And they can do it again. The idea that an 18-year-old can walk into a store and buy weapons of war designed and marketed to kill is, I think, just wrong.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. So great to be here with you. I feel so blessed to be part of the Relevant Radio family here while Drew is out on vacation. And he will be back, of course, next week. But in the meantime, we have a lot of different issues to discuss. We've got a great show lined up for you today. The audio you just heard was President Joe Biden speaking, I think it was probably a couple of days ago, after the shooting in Uvalde. He addressed the nation. He's about to do so again this evening, a relatively rare primetime speech coming up from President Biden regarding the efforts in Congress to pass some sort of legislation in the wake of the Uvalde shooting. And then there was, of course, another shooting earlier today. Yesterday. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. Yesterday in Oklahoma. That one is a little bit more of a targeted attack. It was a gentleman who had surgery done on his back, and he went after his surgical team that performed the surgery. I'm not sure what the issues were there. We will that will certainly unfold over the next few days, but it is probably time to have a conversation about firearms, about policing, about mental health, all sorts of different issues that go into this. And here to join us for this, we're really blessed to have Joe Sikora, former actor and stuntman. Also, former police officer with the city of Santa Monica for 17 years. He's currently a licensed marriage and family therapist and author of Defying Gravity, How Choosing Joy Lifted My Family from Death to Life. That's from Ignatius Press. And Joe, really good to talk to you again today.
It is so good to talk to you. I guess I could offer a unique perspective on the shootings and the violence that we see in society right now. As a former police officer, you know, I think about the gun control issues or the violence. And as a therapist, I think about how this is actually causing so much anxiety, you know, probably with your listeners right now. People are really struggling.
Absolutely.
And so this is a wonderful time to have this topic about mental health and what we can do.
Well, I think that, you know, first off, there's the focus is going to be on what you can do legislatively as a response to this. And, you know, unfortunately, well-trod ground, right, in the political debate. And you right. have people who are adamant that we need to ban certain classes of firearms as a response to this. You have people who are just as adamant who are saying this is not a weapons issue. It is a mental health issue. It is a law enforcement issue. Is there a common ground left to get to, I would ask you, Joe? And you're probably the most uniquely positioned person that we could possibly ask about this, having been in law enforcement and therapy and all of that sort. You have really been all around this issue.
You know, I guess that's true, but you just set the bar really high. Now I got to
Unfortunately,
like
yes, I know. I know I did. I apologize for that.
That's okay. You know, let's start there, because I think one of the problems is when we're faced with these mass shootings and this violence in society, everybody freaks out, understandably. I mean, these are traumatic events that are happening. And the problem is, however, is we look for the quick solutions.
Yeah.
So we finger point, we say, gosh, if only we could ban assault weapons, if only we could address this. And I think we have to step back from that and say it's not necessarily, you know, that easily solved. Now, I've got to tell you, just from my position, you know, as one who's been around firearms, you know, pretty much my whole life, and as a police officer for years and years, and, you know, to me, it was a tool. But I used to think, I thought, okay, here I am in a room with 30, 50 cops, and I don't feel threatened, and they all have multiple guns on them and everything. So I always thought, okay, it is about this other person. You know, this is about this person who is struggling in society. What can we do? Now, that's just, you know, from my perspective as a law enforcement officer. Even as a therapist, because I'm a current marriage and family therapist, and I work with people with anxiety and depression and everything else who feel their lives to be on the edge. And so I still come back to this place. I thought, okay, what can you and I do? You know, what can we do individually to help promote a more just, a peaceful, a healthy, safe society? And that's kind of where I go, because the truth is this. If you're listening to Relevant Radio right now, and obviously you are, right, there is a 0.0001% chance that you will be involved in a mass shooting. Your son or daughter will become a mass shooter or killer. But we are all on edge right now. And so I come back, I step back and say, okay, what can you do as the individual to promote a more peaceful society? Because mass killers, they make everything about them. You know, our faith, and you probably think about this, we become aware that our life is not just about you and me. It's about others. You know, Jesus said, look out at others, where you see the poor, the impoverished, the struggling. See me in them. And I think that's the first thing that we can do is, as a society, if we want to make a difference, is to start seeing people as Jesus, as our brothers and sisters, and say, what can we do for that person? So it sounds funny. It would be easy to talk about gun legislation, but I can't control that. You know, I can cast one vote, but you and I can both make the world a better place by being more loving people. Does that make sense? Did I just change this completely?
No, I think you did. I think you did. And it still makes sense, right? I mean, it's part of it. Building better communities isn't just about passing laws. It's not even just about enforcing laws. Although I think you can make an argument that if we had a little bit more assertive law enforcement, some of these people would be identified before they had the opportunity to get their hands on these weapons. And I think that there's an argument for that. I think there's an argument in terms of who can access what weapons. I mean, I have my own opinions on that, but I think that there's a debate to be had. And I'm looking forward to that debate taking place. But in reality, and I think you've really hit the nail on the head here, and again, we're talking with Joe Sikora, you've hit the nail on the head here, which is, what is it that we can do? Certainly, we can lobby for certain laws, we can sign petitions, we can get online and talk about what our preferences are. But in the end, what we really need to do is we really need to build healthier communities, and that really starts with everybody being involved in their communities and not making it just something that happens to other people. And I think that that's really the struggle here, Joe, is that when you hear that somebody shot up a school, I mean, most of us have had children, some of us have grandchildren, some are even still in schools, and it immediately becomes so personalized that it really cuts to our hearts. And I don't know anybody who doesn't feel that when it comes to this. It's one of the reasons why it's so passionate. It's also one of the reasons why I think it really results in so much stasis.
Yes. I think, you know, if you look at the commonalities, and obviously as a former law enforcement officer, I studied this. As a therapist currently, I study this. And I think, well, what are the commonalities among people who become deviant, who really step outside and do these mass shootings or horrible things? And one of the common denominators is a lack of empathy. And this is something that you and I, Ed, can do in our own lives, in our families, with our neighbors. We're losing a sense of empathy, I think, in this country. Obviously, this isn't anything new, but we've become very polarized. Now, I think personally, even though I'm not a historian, I think there have been times in our nation's history that we've been more polarized, like during the Civil War.
Sure, of
course, the 60s. But I think the more that we can do to create empathy, you know, in our own communities, become curious about people that you don't know. You know, we tend to divide ourselves in groups. I mean, even Catholics, we do that. As we're Catholic and you're Protestant. Well, what about just seeing what is common among us? You know, this love for Jesus or this love for God or to do good for other people. These are things that we can actually do to create a better life. You know, we tend to focus on what separates us. And again, this polarization, Democrat versus Republican, blue state versus red state, you know, and I think that that just separates us from getting into each other's worlds. And so if we can focus and find similarities rather than just focusing on the differences, putting people in boxes or creating stereotypes, I think this would go a long way to creating a better, healthier society.
We're speaking again with Joe Sikora, taking your calls at 888-914-9149. And Joe, look, I mean, and by the way, you can find more about Joe at joesikora.com. That's S-I-K-O-R-R-A, joesikora.com. You know, Joe, I completely agree with you on this. And I think we do tend to get very much in lanes, right? When we're talking about this, and this is what the gospel teaches us, is to break out of those lanes. Right.
Right.
If you want an example of this, you can just go to the Good Samaritan, right? The parable of the Good Samaritan, who's the only person in that entire parable who actually breaks out of a lane to help somebody. Everybody else stays in their lanes. And I think it is about getting out of our lanes and making those personal connections. And I would argue that we're seeing this mostly among young adults, right? I mean, these incidents, I'm not sure about the one in Tulsa. That's actually really a completely different paradigm. That one happened yesterday. But the school shootings that take place are usually younger adults who have not right. ever had that sort of empathetic connection. And it, at times are the victims of bullying who are left to fend for themselves on that. This is a type of engagement that needs to really take place very right. early on. And we need to be cognizant then also of not just the hardened security of schools in terms of outside threats, which I think is a fine topic to take up here, but also the sort of the soft internal security about making sure that all the kids have a safe environment, not, you know, amongst themselves, right? That people who yeah. are preying on certain kids are addressed, and the people who are victimized by that get some sort of follow-up. And, you know, teachers can't do all of this. They've got really, really heavy-duty jobs. I think that this is part of it, right, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that what we can do as parents, as families, too, is to really teach and encourage our kids to identify those other kids who see themselves as outside, because one of the commonalities that you see among mass shooters or mass murderers is that they all feel like they're victims, that they have been done wrong, that society has ruined them. And sometimes we push people out. Now, this doesn't happen to most kids. Most kids who feel alienated, they don't become murderers or whatnot. But we see that those who do become murderers share that sense of victimhood, that they've been pushed out, that they've been alienated. So they develop this mentality, well, I will show you, I will get back at you. And so I think as a parent, as just individuals, we can look at those individuals who have been marginalized, who have been pushed out, who are the, you know, for whatever reason, and bring them back into the fold. And again, that's why our faith is so healthy, because that's what Jesus says, just like the Good Samaritan and the great gospel story. You know, that person who is down and out, they're my brother, they're my sister. So I think the more that we can do that to really create that empathy, to try to get a better idea of somebody else's life, we're going to create a better world. You know, and as a parent, you know, it's got to be scary too, because I think one of the big things that I see, Ed, is parents are freaking out. They're thinking, oh my gosh, I don't want to send my kid to school, or I don't want to go out myself. So there's this vicarious trauma that we feel when we watch the news and we see all the bad things going on. And that would be something else I would really encourage you. If you're watching too much news, if you're just looking at the bad things going on in the world, stop. Get out of that life and come to the aid of somebody else. Volunteer at that soup kitchen. Go down to St. Vincent de Paul and feed the hungry and the homeless. And that will change your mindset, because we have to address our own anxiety first. If we want to make a difference in the world, we have to address our own anxiety. And a lot of people are really struggling right now.
We are speaking with Joe Sikora and taking your calls at 888-914-9149. Let's talk to Anthony in Mission Viejo. Anthony, welcome to the show.
For having me.
Yes, sir. What's your question?
I raise children for a living. It's called Caveman Daycare. And what I have noticed is that one of my specific jobs is I end up single parents and I produce give the children the male's input. They are missing their family member. We've let off the guys to where the moms get no help whatsoever. Then the children get no help because they can't afford it. Well, they come to me and I've had homeless children, 3, and I watch them bloom. And now I've got, I've had another homeless child. She's 1. Now she's 13. She's probably going to hate it if she hears this. But I have children that are 2 years old and up to 6. Ask me when it's time for everybody to be picked up, because I take care of 8 kids a day. They'll sit there and they'll look and watch, well, this person's mom picked them up one day, and then dad picked them up one day, and mom picked them up. They're calling it alternating. There comes out of their mouth from 2 years old on, is my dad going to come pick me up today? That is like a dagger going in your belly. Yep. It is just unfortunate that this is happening. Now, Anthony, I'm a Christian white boy, takes care of Muslims. I make them read the Quran. The more you ask, the more you get. And so demand straight A's. Show them that you care, like the gentleman that you were just talking to. Show them that you're interested in their school. I threaten them that I'll go to school with nasty outfit on if you don't get straight A's and sit right next to you. And they finally just go, it's much easier just to get an A.
Anthony, I appreciate that. And I think that you're hitting on something here. I want to make sure that Joe gets a chance to respond to this. I mean, this is really, I think, and I've thought about this an awful lot too. I mean, this is sort of very long-term thinking, but you didn't have these issues before you had this sort of serious breakdown of the family, of the nuclear family in Western culture and American culture. And I think Anthony put his finger right on it. A lot of these kids are missing either a father figure or in some cases a mother figure that could deal with the leadership and the empathy the way that a traditional family model would have.
Yes. Well, first I want to say God bless that man for the work that he is doing. It's so important.
Absolutely.
There was an interesting study done, Ed, and it was a 40-year study, and they looked at kids who were orphaned, who were abandoned. And some of those kids went on in life and thrived, and some did not. Some seriously just fell off the, all the wheels fell off the vehicle of their life.
Sure.
And what they found in common for the kids who thrived was that they had other people step into their lives, other father figures, mother figures. That was the commonality. And so things that you can do like foster care or, again, volunteering, helping kids do their homework, just letting them know by your presence that they matter, that they are cared for, that they are loved. That is so important. And again, I think that's a lot that we're losing right now in society, not just with the breakdown of traditional marriage, because we're seeing that, but, where we're not connecting anymore. And even kids, they're connecting via social media. They're not connecting with real touch and interest in conversation and sports. It's become more of this technological world where we're increasingly disconnected. And
right.
I think that's what we see, again, going back to the mass shootings and the killings. These are people who have disconnected from society.
Well, Joe, I want to take one more quick phone call here because Phil in San Antonio has a good perspective as well. Phil, welcome to the conversation.
Yeah, thanks very much, and I really appreciate the comments that a man who is really on the grassroots and the ground level of actually raising kids on a day-to-day basis,
right?
And what he did. But I understand that our call for commonality and for common ground has been going out for many years, many, many years. I don't think that's the answer. I think what we've got to recognize that, as you gentlemen have pointed out, our society is weak. The family has broken down. And as a result, it has spawned a real evil in this world that is being spawned in the minds and in the hearts of our young ones and young adults that then come out and act out. It's a real root cause problem that we have. We've kicked God out of every area in our lives, out of our schools,
yes,
and everywhere else. And we somehow feel that without him, that things are going to get better. I'm all for one of trying to reach common ground, but I think there comes a point in time where the line has got to be drawn in the sand to confront real evil, and it exists.
Yeah, Nick, I'm gonna go to Joe on this with just one really quick question. I think that there's a difference between common ground between people of good faith, right, who have different points of view on policies. But I think that,
right,
Phil is touching on something here about the need to be assertive in dealing with people who are perpetrating evil acts and are acting out in evil ways, and to do so early so that that doesn't escalate. And I think that that's another piece of this. It's not that that's the only piece, or that trying to find common ground between people of good faith is the only piece here. There are multiple pieces here, and that's what Phil is talking about is certainly has to be one of those.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, both callers have had excellent points. And when I say,
yep,
common ground, it's not a Pollyannish kind of outlook like, oh, we're all the same. You know, it's not that. It's really living out the gospel is seeing in that other person value, you know, that they too have been created in the image and likeness of God. You know, it goes back to,
right,
living out the faith. I think that's where we restore. Of course, the breakdown of the family. But you know what? We have to get outside, sometimes even our own family, and love that other child who is alone or has been abandoned, or, you know, is really making that sort of connection again. You know, it's love. It sounds cliche, and I avoid cliches usually, but every once in a while they slip out. But it is love in action that really heals, you know, and I think that's what's missing. The opposite of love is I guess you could say hate, but it's almost a lack of empathy. It's a lack of, you know, connection.
Yeah, I mean, I'd almost say, I mean, certainly hate is one opposite. I'd say indifference is another.
Indifference, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ed. Indifference is really the opposite of love. It's like, I just don't care at all. You know, hate at least says,
right,
you know, I see you. It's not good, but I see,
right,
you.
Yes. And but, I think that that's, but, I mean, actually, I think that that's, you're hitting at the heart of this. We're going to have to wrap this up, but just being seen. I think a lot of this is just making sure that kids, when they're younger, feel seen, feel valued. And I'm not talking about in terms of the whole, you know, empathy or self-esteem sort of way, but I mean in a real practical way and making those personal connections, not on the basis,
yeah,
of that they're the center of the universe, but that they at least matter, and they matter in a substantial way, not just as in terms of a cliche, but they actually,
yeah,
do matter. And that's the reason why what Anthony's doing in Mission Viejo works, why mentoring programs that really touch children's lives and allow for those personal connections help. And those are the types,
yeah,
of things I think that while we're arguing over the politics, Joe, we can at least be doing those things. Joe, we've got just a couple of, we've got about 30 seconds left here. Where can people find out more about you, and where can people reach you?
Well, I think, again, thank you for having me on and talking about this. You know, joesecora.com is my website. I've started doing podcasts, putting out two or three a week. You can find those on Spotify and Google Podcasts and a few other places. But there's a lot of people who are really hurting right now. And I just think we've got to do what you can, what I can, to make the world a little bit better place by connecting, by being curious about other people, and letting everybody know that they do matter. We are one family under God, and we've got to treat our other neighbors as our brothers and sisters.
Indeed. Joe Secora, thank you very much for being with us. I want to thank Anthony in Mission Viejo and Phil in San Antonio for a couple of really excellent calls. Relevant Radio audience is just so smart and so thoughtful. It is a real pleasure to be here. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. We'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. You might hear some of these headlines and think, this can't possibly be true.
You want answers!
I want the truth!
Or is it?
You can't handle the truth!
See if you can discern the myth from the reality.
Is this real life?
Let's play fact or fiction.
Yeah, this is real life.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 32 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. But before we get to that, gotta remind you that this is the last week that you can get Father Rocky's new free book, The Memorare Moment. Our world desperately needs Mary's help right now. So join us today at relevantradio.com/moment with this new free book to learn more about this prayer and why praying it right now can change history. Listeners and readers Mark and Terry Caller in Minnesota wrote to us about the Memorare Moment. Woven remarkably with easy-to-read anecdotes of Father Rocky's delightful Catholic upbringing, the book helped us understand the power of saying the Memorare in these challenging times. It is a simple prayer with great power. May this book bring people closer to our mother and the power that she can have when we turn to her on a regular basis. And as I've always said, I turn to her on a regular basis, especially when I'm guest hosting for Drew. And I can't tell you how much that is a comfort to me. And having this tool to come closer to our mother is just an amazing opportunity. So you need to act right now because the final copies are going fast. Sign up today at relevantradio.com/moment. And that will get you the free book while we still have them. Now let's turn back to the news. And I don't know how many people caught this. It was a couple of days ago at the New York Times. And I'm just going to go ahead and read you the headline here. Help wanted, state misinformation sheriff. Several states are putting more money and effort into combating false and misleading information about elections. This is about Connecticut putting together a misinformation squad or office. And this follows on the heels of the collapse of a similar effort at the Department of Homeland Security, which turned out to be a complete bust up over there. The person that they hired to run it was somebody who had been a hardscrabble partisan. And it raised all sorts of questions about what the role is of government in determining misinformation in the first place. Here to discuss that with us is Joseph Vasquez. He's an assistant editor of Free Speech America and Business at the Media Research Center. You can find that online at mrc.org. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Hello, Ed. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on there. But we should probably mention that you are also on Twitter, because if you really want to know about misinformation, you should really be on Twitter. At JV3MRC is Joseph's Twitter handle. You know, I joke around. Obviously, in social media, there's all sorts of nonsense that people will post because people are, of course, you know, usually. Not usually. I don't want to say usually, but people certainly have misinterpretations, misinformation. I mean, that's just part of life, and part of an adult is being able to discern misinformation and being able to research and come up with the correct answers. Lately, though, it seems like the government wants to take over that responsibility. What is going on in Connecticut, and what's going on with some of these states hiring misinformation sheriffs?
So if I were to sum this up in just a one-liner, it's as if we cut the head off the Hydra, which was the federal DGB, and now 10 more are now being raised up in its place. You know, so this is what's happening in Connecticut. So they're creating this position using taxpayer dollars to create to hire a misinformation expert just in time for the 2022 elections, and this person is going to get a fat six-figure salary, $150,000 for their work. And here is here's the kicker: the New York Times was slobbering all over this because apparently several other states are also looking to combat misinformation in similar fashions. This person who Connecticut is looking to hire, which again is run by liberals, the person is expected to comb fringe sites like 4chan, far-right social networks like Getter and Rumble, this is the New York Times, and mainstream social media sites to root out early misinformation narratives about voting before they go viral, and then urge the companies to remove or flag the posts that contain false information. Ergo, censorship. So, and it's funny because Connecticut, it's a state government triplex. It's all run by one side of the aisle. And now we're supposed to trust one political party to root out the sources of misinformation just in time before an election season starts. Like, oh my goodness, it was bad enough that that the Biden administration tried to sell the federal one, the federal DGB, as being nonpartisan. But now you have an explicitly partisan government creating another misinformation apparatus. It's absolutely bonkers that anyone thinks that this should be taken seriously as a serious effort to combat misinformation.
Well, Joseph, I take your point about the tilt of the state of Connecticut. But, you know, I live in Texas, which is, you know, where everybody should live. And the tilt of the government, I'm sorry, I'm sort of new to Texas. I've been here for about a year or so. And they already have the drinking game going inside the studio. Whenever I mention Texas, I'm going to make sure that these guys all need Ubers by the time we're done this afternoon. But it's very much a Republican establishment down here. And I wouldn't want them to be running a disinformation or appointing a disinformation sheriff or a misinformation sheriff either. I mean, this is not just an issue of I don't like the fact that Democrats are going to do this to Republicans. I'm really not crazy about Republicans doing it to Democrats either, because I just don't see this as a government function. In fact, I'm not sure why it became a government function. It is almost something out of, this is a little bit of a reductio ad absurdum, and I'll just say that up front, but I mean, it's sort of a Ministry of Truth thing out of 1984, which is exactly how we were describing the DHS effort with Nina Jankowicz when she was briefly in charge of it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this has nothing to do with partisanship. Government should be nowhere near monitoring free speech whatsoever. It's like, how in the world? You're supposed to create like some sort of Ministry of Truth apparatus where the government narrative is the narrative, and anyone who contradicts it is pushing disinformation and is a threat to, so to speak. I mean, like, you know, the DHS has even characterized the federal one, characterized disinformation as being a national security threat. So I'm like, okay, so anyone who disagrees with what governments are putting out there is immediately considered against what the truth is and needs to be silenced for it. It's absolutely absurd. But, you know, here's the interesting thing. You know, I mean, no party at all should be engaged in this kind of thing whatsoever. The framers of the Constitution created freedom of speech so that people can debate. And that's what makes us a free country. It's the ability of people to be able to speak freely. And if you control the speech, you control the people. That's because it affects the free flow of information. That's where you get propaganda. That's where you get what Orwell was talking about. I can imagine ever since the federal DGB was set into place, and now all these splinter groups that are scattering and that are popping up in these other states, he's turning over in his grave right now. It's like, oh my goodness, this is supposed to be a fiction novel, and it turned out to be prophetic of what would come in the future. So, you know, and it's, what's interesting is that Cecilia Kung, who wrote this New York Times propaganda piece popping up Connecticut's efforts, noted specifically that the states, most of the states that are engaging in this kind of thing, are controlled by the left, and that's what it is now. But the point of the matter is that no one should look to restrict the free speech of the American people whatsoever. There needs to be a free flow of information, and that's what the left, and that's what these governments are looking to squash, because if you have free speech, you have a free people, and that's a threat to their claim to power.
Well, and again, we're speaking with Joseph Vasquez of the Media Research Center and taking your calls at 888-914-9149. We were actually talking a little bit about this with Ilya Soman yesterday, when I was guest hosting yesterday. And in terms of moderation on social media platforms, right? So if social media platforms, certainly they own their own platforms, so they can choose whatever moderation that they want. And my point to Ilya on this was that I agree with that, but the problem is when you have the government starting to put pressure on certain types of moderation. And he agreed with me on this, although there wasn't really, we don't really have a solution to it. It's just that it's a concern and we need to watch it. And he agreed with me on that. And I agreed with him on the fact that
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's 45 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew. Alligator lizards in the air is what caused that last break, but we got the alligator lizards out of the air. I'm a big, huge fan of America, by the way, so love the bumper, guys. But now that we have the alligator lizards out of the air, let's get back to Joseph Vasquez of the Media Research Center talking about misinformation sheriffs, taking your calls. We've got a couple calls already on the line here. Joseph, when we got disconnected, unfortunately, when I got disconnected, we were just talking about the fact that this seems almost like a lobbying effort for governments to put even more focused pressure on social media platforms and perhaps even other media outlets. And is that how you guys are seeing it at Media Research Center as well?
Oh, we're absolutely seeing the government, trying to lay claim and establish this kind of apparatus. I mean, it didn't work at the federal level for now, but now other states are seeing, oh, this is interesting. Let's see if we can establish our own state versions of these disinformation apparatuses. I mean, if you can, as I was saying before we got cut off, if you control the narrative, if you control the flow of information, you end up controlling the minds and hearts of the people. If there's only one side or one narrative that's allowed free reign, that's why it's absolutely dangerous and why the American people, the people of Connecticut especially, need to be aware and awake to this. This is dangerous. This is Orwellian. And, it actually goes back to something that Orwell himself said in 1984. You alluded to it earlier. But he said that the revolution will be complete when the language is perfect. Now, that's the scary goal. If they can achieve that, they've won. We cannot let that happen. And that's what we're fighting at the Media Research Center. We're fighting the media on this, and we're standing up for free speech for all Americans.
We should probably include the URL for the Media Research Center. It's mrc.org, right? Is that correct?
Correct. And then our site where we do our media analysis is at newsbusters.org.
Newsbusters.org, yes.
Yes. And then we also have a news site that focuses on the latest in big tech censorship. That's censortrack.org. And we log every single case that we can find of conservatives being censored by big tech companies. We're currently now over 3,700 logged cases. And it's continuing to go high as the time goes on. So we invite everyone to view that and to reach out to us. If you're censored on any one of these platforms, reach out to us on censortrack.org, and we're going to look into those cases. We're going to hold big tech accountable.
We are speaking with Joseph Vasquez of the Media Research Center and taking your calls. Let's go to Teresa in Covina, California. Teresa, welcome to the conversation.
God bless both of you, and especially Relevant Radio and all our listeners. Okay, how responsible are we as church, as Catholics, to let information be known? And I will just basically say, in California, they passed a law that can kill babies up to 2 months after birth, and I don't think most people, especially Hispanic voters, know anything about it, and this just really hurts me.
Well, Teresa, thank you so much for your call, and thank you so much for your blessings. I really appreciate that. And, Joseph, I mean, I think that we can talk a little bit about how organizations can be better at communicating information. I think that there's things that everybody can improve on. you know, this is, but this is part of the mix, right? I mean, we are now in an era, and, you know, I grew up in the three network era, right? If you wanted news on television, you had three broadcast channels to choose from. And
that's
if
right.
you want,
I'm home. I'm back.
Your life connected. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Ed back again. A couple more alligator lizards in the air, but we knocked them out. Joseph Vasquez from the Media Research Center talking with us right now. And I was just posing a question to you, Joseph, about how we can, as private organizations, you know, and private citizens, obviously we have a lot more access to information than we've had in past eras. And a lot of the responsibility then for misinformation and for correct information really does fall to us, which is the way it should be. That's the democratization of the media that we've experienced over the last generation or so.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely incumbent upon us as the American people and as private organizations as well to be able to speak freely. And now the problem is that, you know, COVID really changed the way that, you know, people communicate. You know, once we started getting isolated from each other, you know, we weren't able to, you know, we weren't meeting as much, we weren't able to communicate as much, and then all of our communication, including people's livelihoods, were then transferred onto the internet. So now we have a problem. Now you have big tech that is able to manage and moderate the content that people are able to share on their accounts with their families and friends and things of that nature. So the way that, you know, that we're fighting back at the Media Research Center is that we're logging this. We're logging every instance of big tech censorship that comes on, and, you know, of conservative speech. You know, the woman who just called a little earlier, she mentioned abortion. I mean, big tech is censoring people for sharing pro-life stories as well, and things that call out abortion for what it is. You know, it's absolutely imperative that we continue to speak. You know, there's an old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. We need to speak louder. What happened with Disney in Florida? What happened with Loudoun County in Virginia, when parents had enough of kids being indoctrinated with leftist nonsense about, you know, about gender and things of that nature? It's about us being able to stand up and speak louder. Why does the left, you know, continue to win on cultural issues and things of that nature? It's precisely because they know how to speak. They know how to speak loudly. Well, we need to speak loudly. We need to do that as the American people, the people who are concerned about the direction that this country is taking.
And let's go to one more call. We've got Lillian in Sacramento wanting to join the conversation. Lillian, great to hear from you today.
Thank you for taking my call. Well, I was looking at the big picture of why we have misinformation. How did it start? It started from the media, and our own government is kind of pushing misinformation in a way, and yet they're saying that they're controlling. They're trying to control misinformation. So it's really a way of keeping the truth out of the picture. In other words, all we hear is lies because people get confused and they don't know what is truth and what is not truth anymore. And they want people that way, then they can control us more.
Yeah, Lillian, it's a great point, and thank you so much for your call. Joseph, I wanted to bring this up, and I'm glad that Lillian did this, because it actually leads me into a point that I wanted to make all along. I don't know if you had a chance to read Jack Schaefer at Politico when this DHS Disinformation Governance Board thing first floated to the top. And, you know, I've been reading Jack for years, and Jack is not really cut from my particular, you know, political point of view, but he's a really good writer, and he really just drilled right to the heart of this by saying that government has been, over the last 50 years, government's been the biggest purveyor of misinformation. And so if they really want to have a disinformation governance board, it sounded like a great idea to him, as long as it was just taking aim at the government itself. And I think that was a really superb point that he made. And this is not a guy who's necessarily conservative, it's just a guy who is very skeptical and very suspicious of government wielding that sort of, you know, imprimatur, if you will, on what's truth and what is not truth.
Well, that's why, you know, you made the point earlier, it's not necessarily about the partisan part of it. I mean, even the ACLU, the liberal ACLU, was skeptical about the government monitoring what's truth and what isn't. I mean, so the fact that Jack Schaefer at Politico had pointed this out, I mean, I remember one of my colleagues had written up actually the piece that he wrote at Politico on this very issue. He asked a slew of a list of very interesting questions. He said, who among us thinks the government should add to its work the list, the job of determining what is true and what is disinformation? And who thinks the government is capable of telling the truth? Well, if history is any teacher to us, we know that the government has a tendency to lie, to put it very mildly. So what's the best disinfectant for lies? It's sunlight. If you try to silence people and then just create one narrative, I mean, first of all, how in the world is anyone supposed to trust that what you're saying is truth? I mean, because if you just want to silence your critics, you're pretty much admitting, without saying it, that your argument is actually very weak, and if it was subject to any kind of scrutiny, it would absolutely fall apart. And that's why the government is saying, well, you know, enough of this. We can't win in the free marketplace of ideas, so what are we going to do? We're just going to control the narrative altogether. That's why for someone like Jack Schaefer and even for the ACLU, okay, this is a step too far. This is like exactly what Orwell was warning about. And that's, I've been telling people in the conservative movement, I've been telling people in radio stations, Orwell is turning over in his grave. The more that governments at the federal level, or whether it be at the state level, the fact that they're trying to institutionalize this. You know, Madison had said something very interesting in Federalist 48. He said that power is of an encroaching nature. What does that mean? Well, now that the people with power have tasted what it's like to control the narrative, they're not going to stop. They are going to want more. That is the nature of power, and it's been evident throughout history. This is what government does.
Well, and I think power corrupts, and power corrupts absolutely too as well. I mean, and this is part of the issue of why you want to have limited power, government, you know, limited powers of government. You want very clearly delineated boundaries for government because of that particular issue. And one of the boundaries of government is not to interfere in free speech and free debate. And so this is part of what they were talking about when they were crafting the First Amendment. And I think that we have become so sort of passive about doing things for ourselves that we're looking for ways to get government involved where it really shouldn't be. I'm going to give you like 20 seconds to respond to that. We're almost out of time here.
No, the reason why the framers embedded the First Amendment and codified it in the Constitution was precisely because the people were to be the ones that were responsible for the prevalence preserving society, preserving its values.
Right.
And the moment that free speech is completely silenced out of the picture, once we've gotten rid of that, then you just have an oligarchy of people who just want to control what people think, what they consume, what news they can take in, and then be able to craft whatever version of truth that they can come up with in the spur of the moment. This is why I said at the very beginning, we've got rid of one head of the Hydra. Now you have 10 that are sprouting up. And unless we're awake, they're going to win.
Joseph Vasquez, Assistant Editor of Free Speech America and Business at the Media Research Center, MRC.org. Thank you for being with us. Coming up next, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew. We'll be right back.